From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 88 of Little Brother for the 11th of June, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. The U.S. federal government is putting together a strategy regarding what they are calling privacy-preserving data sharing and analytics. The strategy attempts to balance the needs that the government has for data to make decisions against a fundamental right to privacy. Isn't that novel? The notice, published in the Federal Register on Thursday, cites several use cases for better data collection, including in the areas of healthcare, climate change, financial crime, human trafficking, and pandemic response. You remember the bug I mentioned at the end of the headlines last week, dubbed Felina? Well, security firm Proofpoint says that it is finding exploits of that bug on the rise, with thousands of phishing messages containing a lure document. One campaign they discovered was masquerading as a salary increase letter stored in an RTF file, which would download the exploit payload. Now, with that said, while RTF is a valid file format for a document, it's exceptionally rare these days, with DocX and PDF being far more common. Likely the best strategy is to treat that itself as a red flag. There is no patch yet, however, a workaround is available, which is to remove the MS-MSDT key from the HKEY classes root hive in your registry. How about some good news? The European Union has issued regulations that will require that all portable electronic devices, such as phones, tablets, and cameras, use USB-C as the standard charging connector. Yes, that includes Apple. Previous regulations required the use of USB connectors. However, Apple was able to find a loophole in the regulation to permit Lightning connectors and their 19-pin predecessor by making cables readily available that convert these to USB-A. The new regulation will require that USB-C connectors actually appear on the device. A couple of years ago, Apple introduced the M1 processor, an ARM-based system-on-a-chip, or SoC, intended to take the place of the x86 processors that ran most Macs at that point. This is actually the fourth processor family to be found on Macs. They originally ran on the Motorola 68K processors, then Power, then x86, and now ARM. Overall, this is probably a positive development, as ARM's a debatably superior processor, but it does come with some growing pains. One of those growing pains was uncovered by researchers at MIT. The researchers were able to exploit speculative execution, an optimization feature found in many processors, to bypass one of the M1's security features. Unfortunately, due to the hardware-based nature of the exploited vulnerability, there does not seem to be a way to patch around it. If you ever wanted to hear an argument about how working remotely is a good thing, here's one. It seems like the IT sector in Ukraine has been surprisingly resilient despite the ongoing war with Russia. It seems as though IT workers are able to pick up and move to wherever they can find safety, do their work, and produce their product using any available internet connection. Having this ability has left the sector largely unscathed, even as manufacturing, agriculture, transport, and retail have suffered under the onslaught. In response to the string of mass shootings recently, drone manufacturer Axon has proposed to manufacture law enforcement drones armed with tasers. This immediately raises concerns about the potential for abuse, and of course there is the shortcoming that such a drone can be prevented from reaching its target if it encounters something as simple as a closed door, which, by the way, is something there should be many of during an active shooter scenario. Close every door. Well, it seems that there are ethics concerns as well, as fully three-quarters of Axon's ethics board walked out over the idea. Kudos to them for having an ethics board. Now they just need some ethics to go with it. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. Mandiant is a cybersecurity firm. Their resume includes investigation of supply chain attacks on SolarWinds a couple of years ago, and they were also called in to assist with the Colonial Pipeline ransom last year. The Lockbit ransomware gang claims to have pwned Mandiant and threatened and followed through on a data release. Mandiant have responded by denying Lockbit's claim. Having looked at the dropped files and being underwhelmed, I'm inclined to agree with Mandiant. It's amazing to me how short a period of time it takes from when a technology becomes available and when it really truly takes hold, especially if it's a useful technology such as a smartphone or a global navigation satellite system, you know, GNSS. There are three GNSSs in orbit: GLONASS, owned and operated by the Russian government, Galileo, which operates out of the European Union, and of course our own GPS. All of these systems work on essentially the same principle. The satellites don't gather or have any information about you or where you're located, but instead they broadcast a continuous beacon that your receiver can interpret. The signals from all of the satellites are carefully synchronized, which has the added benefit of providing your receiver with an accurate time standard. What your receiver then does is a process called trilateration. Given that radio waves actually do take time to travel, not a lot, mind you, but a measurable amount nonetheless, the carefully synchronized signals from the satellites will arrive at your receiver with different amounts of delay depending on how far the satellite is from you. Get enough measurements of this, 4 to be specific, and you can slap some math on it and get your latitude, longitude, and altitude, all because of the fact that it takes time for the radio waves to travel from orbit to wherever you are. It's brilliant. It's also surprisingly delicate. On top of that, we've become very dependent on it. Does jamming happen? You bet. Go back to episode 78. I mentioned jamming happening around Russia and Ukraine and impacting neighboring countries such as Finland, Cyprus, Israel, and a few others. Glitching the system can produce some interesting artifacts, such as ships that are observed traveling at 31 knots, much faster than most vessels are capable of, or showing up as far inland rather than anywhere near water. Obviously, this can be quite dangerous. Now, as a practical matter, in an aviation or a marine context, there are other options for navigating. A very old system of ground-based long-wave beacons exists, for instance, called LORAN. LORAN navigation works by triangulation rather than trilateration, where, rather than looking for the timing of the signal, you look for its direction, and you can compute your longitude and latitude, although not your altitude, by measuring the bearing from your location to at least two beacons. These could also be spoofed, of course, but by being on long wave, the antenna to transmit an effective signal is profoundly large, making such a jamming effort generally impractical. In addition to that, in an aviation context, there's the ground-based augmentation system, or GBAS, a VHF-based navigation system used for finding runways. It's moderately short range, as ground-based VHF tends to be, but can provide confirmation that you're near your destination and can line you up with the appropriate runway. So, while problems with GNSS is an obvious inconvenience, it's not a showstopper for commercial use cases. But what about us? What about everyday people like you and me? Let me tell you a quick story. Some time ago, I took my daughter to visit a friend of hers who lived out in the middle of a rural area. The first time I took her out there, I of course used the map app on my phone, which gave me turn-by-turn steps to get there. As long as my phone could see the satellites or enough cell towers, it was good. Next time I took her out there, though, no GPS. Didn't need it. And she asked me how I knew where I was going. Well, I explained that I'd paid attention the first time. Now, while I haven't needed to in a long time, I can still give accurate directions to my home. Most people will just plug an address into the GPS, though, because it's convenient, and it can figure out how to get you back on track if you take a wrong turn somewhere. If you can find a roadmap, those can be useful as well. They still work, as long as they're sufficiently up to date. I don't see very many of those around these days, though. If you understand how the highways are numbered, that too can help you figure out where you are. There's a lot of detail here, so I won't go into it all, but I recommend that if you do any long-distance driving, you take the time to get familiar with how interstate, U.S., and state routes are numbered, and how to tell them apart from each other, because that can provide a lot of clues to keep you on course. So what's my point? Well, LORAN and GBAS used in a commercial context are old-school approaches to navigation that can be used as a backup to the newer, more detailed, but somewhat delicate GPS. Using a map and a compass and other clues to where you are and where you're going, you can also use an old-school approach to navigation for your own purposes. Now, I'm certainly not saying give up the GPS. As I said before, it's incredibly handy. However, it's maybe not a bad idea to learn other ways to get from point A to point B and to practice them from time to time. You know, if anything goes wrong, you can always use the GPS to bail you out. But you'll eventually get to where you have this skill at your disposal. That's better than staying lost, right? As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. Last year, IBM, working with a nonprofit called ProMare, built a robotic ship that was intended to retrace the journey of the Mayflower from England to what is now the US. The ship, to be unmanned and navigated by artificial intelligence, was supposed to set out from Plymouth, England, and make its way to Plymouth, Massachusetts, with a stop in Provincetown on the way through. It didn't quite happen that way. The first attempt ended up being aborted due to mechanical problems. A later attempt, aiming for Virginia, ended up landing in Portugal because of a problem with the generator. The third attempt, however, did make its way across the Atlantic. The ship set out from Swansea, Wales, and was expected to take about 3 weeks to get from there to Plymouth, Massachusetts. At least on the third try, it did make its way across the Atlantic. However, it made landfall in 5 weeks in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Of course, part of the point of artificial intelligence is that the machines learn and improve, so this isn't a complete fail by any stretch. This sort of error tells me that one of the constraints they put on the design was that it wouldn't have been using GPS for navigation, assuming probably safely that no real jamming or spoofing is going out on the open ocean. For that matter, depending on how you feel about different countries, this could even be viewed as the AI being smarter than its creators by landing in a better place, eh? Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Sudu RMRF No Preserve Root, Thriller at Play, Knight Rider 007, Azrael, Fongaboo, David, and Mysterious 73 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Stored in an RTF file which would download the export payload. Export payload? Exploit payload. You remember the bug I mentioned at the end of the headline? You know what? Let me fix the typos. They originally ran on the Motorola 68K Motorola GLONASS, owned and operated by the Next time I took her out, though, last year, IBM, working with a nonprofit called ProWare,